My name is Andy Conlin, and I'm a graduate student researcher with the Africa Center. Today, you're listening to Field Notes. Field Notes is a growing communications project designed to collect and promote research and communications from Colorado State University and beyond.
Today, we're talking to Martha Beirut. Martha is a PhD student studying African elephant management and polycentric governance. We chat about navigating international research during a pandemic, the ethics and positionality involved in being a researcher from the global north, collaborative conservation, and more. Join us in welcoming Martha.
Hi, my name's Martha Beirut, and I'm a third-year PhD student in Human Dimensions of Natural Resources here at CSU. And I grew up kind of a stereotypical kid who was obsessed with wildlife, was obsessed with lions, really wanted to study wildlife in the bush. So I took the opportunity to study abroad during undergrad in Kenya and Tanzania on a wildlife management program with the School for Field Studies. And that was kind of my first exposure, and I felt like it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Little did I know I would continue to pursue working in the region beyond that. So after I graduated undergrad, I spent a year in Uganda as a conservation education coordinator in elementary schools surrounding a national park for a small NGO called the Kasisi Project. And that was a Princeton in Africa fellowship. And that was where I really started working with people in earnest and realizing that there's a whole human side to wildlife, and the people that must coexist with these wildlife face a bunch of issues, and some of them aren't being adequately addressed or recognized. Then after that, I kind of backtracked and did a pure ecology research project in Ethiopia, studying baboons for 6 months in Awash National Park, studying Hamadryas baboons. And that's when I really missed people. It was a super remote desert field station. And it's when I knew I wanted to study people rather than animals, per se. And that's kind of what brought me to CSU, to the Human Dimensions Department, because it sounded and is really unique of how they do that kind of social science focus to ecological problems.
That's amazing. So that was a fantastic background. So now tell us a little bit about the work you're doing now, what types of research questions that you're trying to answer, and what any faculty that you're working with too would be great.
Yeah, so I'm currently working on my PhD proposal. So I spent 2015 and 2016 in Western Uganda around Kibale National Park, working in schools. Then I was able to return to the region in 2019 for my master's research, where I was doing an ethnographic study, interviewing elders to get an oral history of the elephant presence in their community, because it is a rainforest ecosystem. And it's thought that the elephants there are at least hybrid forest and savanna elephants, if not pure forest elephants. And they are much less studied and are also known for crop raiding in groups rather than as individuals. And with growing human populations, Uganda has the fifth highest population growth rate in the world, and climate change making seasonal predictability really low. It rains when it's not supposed to rain, then it's drought when it's not supposed to be a drought. Crop predictability has been really uncertain, and so the elephant problem has become way larger of an issue. So for my PhD, I'm kind of looking at elephant management and governance across scales. So from the local scale of household, community, farmer coalitions, more broadly to the park scale, to the national scale, and then to the international scale. What I'm really curious about is how the global north, through funding and power, influence international conservation. So international NGOs and international government agencies, such as US Fish and Wildlife Service and the International Union for the Conservation of Nature and the UN, place a lot of funding in conservation and cause a lot of park creations and cause a lot of policy change that affects people on the local scale. Where we feel as Westerners, as people from the United States, that elephants, of course, are really valuable, have an important ecological role and are worth conserving. We don't fully understand what's happening on the local scale and how people are disenfranchised, how people are forced to move as parks are created, and how they kind of continue to be silenced and not helped as crop rating seems to be getting worse. And I'm working with Jen Solomon and John Salerno here in the Human Inventions and Natural Resources Department.
I'm sure that COVID has thrown a wrench in some of those plans. Mm-hmm. So how have you kind of navigated that, and what does the future look like with that?
It really did change my plans. So I was planning to return to Uganda to do that kind of local scale qualitative research in 2020, and of course that didn't happen, and that's what kind of brought me to look at it more in a broad systems perspective, where I'm looking at international actors, so I can interview people remotely potentially, but I do still, I'm hoping to return to Uganda to do my field work in the coming year, so that I can get the local scale perspective.
Totally. Well, I hope that happens. We're rooting for you. So, as you mentioned, your research and kind of your approach to your project takes on that kind of social ecological framework. How did you, and you did touch on this, so feel free to build off of that. How did you decide that this was the type of science you wanted to conduct, or how did you land on kind of a social ecological systems framework?
Yeah, so I found with time that I was always more energized by and kind of inspired by and motivated by the human perspective, where it seems kind of clinical and not realistic almost to do a pure wildlife-based study but ignore the human dimensions component, ignore, especially with climate change, and that's affecting everything. But just, yeah, to ignore all of those anthropogenic influences on systems, I think, isn't responsible science anymore, especially in the last 30 years. And I've been happy to see a kind of shift, paradigm shift, towards recognizing the value of qualitative research and the necessity of it, especially when looking to change policy or, monitor conservation programs.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. What is or has been the most rewarding aspect of being an academic scientist in your field, and what do you find most challenging?
The most rewarding has definitely been, it sounds corny, but working with the communities. I've always worked really rurally. As much as I love going to the cities and going to see friends in Kampala, the capital, I very much enjoy the kind of, on the ground, kind of slow way of life. It's very different from here in the States and the way things are expected to happen immediately and happen quickly and have a high turnaround, and just that kind of shift, that lifestyle shift that I experienced during my year in Uganda. Felt comfortable to me, felt best for me, especially with my chronic illnesses. I need to slow down a lot and need to rest a lot, and that kind of environment was really conducive to that, really kind of healing. So working with people, learning a language. I previously studied Swahili, and Swahili is basically only spoken in the armed forces in Uganda. It's the language of the army and the military. So whereas you can choose it as an elective in like high school, you don't grow up speaking it. And Swahili is in a language family called Bantu languages. So in Western Uganda, I'm in the Toro Kingdom, so they speak Rutoro. It's in the same family of languages, and it was actually really fun for me to learn after 2 years of studying Swahili, being the same grammar structure. I was being tutored at the elementary school closest to where I lived, and just having fun with that and having fun with speaking with people in that language, even though English is a national language, you know, and the more rural you get, the lower the average education level is. So, yeah, just kind of being conversational in Rutshuro kind of has been the most rewarding and just most fun, and feels like I'm getting the most out of the experience by understanding that kind of cultural dynamic and respecting it and doing my utmost to respect it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's super impressive that you learned the local language and made that additional effort. How have you addressed kind of the barriers of doing research in another country and avoiding kind of fortress conservation, mm-hmm. going in, doing research and leaving, and you know, respecting the cultural norms that you've kind of brought up?
So it's important to recognize and emphasize, and I feel like there's a current like lack in studies of recognizing and emphasizing the positionality and ethics and power dynamics of being a researcher from the global north, coming from a higher education background, just inserting themselves into a community that isn't their own, where there's this whole colonial history and neocolonial present, and a lot of aspects of international conservation are neocolonial in the way that, as you said, the fortress conservation method, which is separate people from nature. There's a lot of considerations and ethics and values issues with that, and I think it would, again, kind of be irresponsible and false to present whatever findings I have from my interviews as being the whole truth, of being like reflective of what's actually happening, of actual perceptions, because like during my master's research, they knew I was from that NGO, and they know that NGO's primary objective is conservation and health education. So they knew that, like, I was asking them about elephants, so there's that social desirability bias of potentially choosing answers that they think I want to hear as being associated with that NGO. So it's really complicated, and it's why I've been looking into and emphasizing being as collaborative as possible. Having Ugandan collaborators and mentors and people giving me feedback and providing research questions and research directions, and making sure that there's an empowerment aspect. And that's kind of what I'm aiming to do with a photo voice project that I'm looking to implement during my field work. So photo voice is a collaborative participatory research method where you provide a community or a group with cameras and give them a prompt, like photograph what water means to you, or photograph what women's health means to you and your community, and then caption it in your own words. So I'm looking to do that, but in the context of elephant conflict, and to be doing that over WhatsApp. So smartphones are becoming more and more prevalent. Almost every household, at least one person, has an iPhone. So I'm looking to kind of create a network over WhatsApp so that it can kind of be a more longitudinal study rather than a few short weeks. I'm coming in asking you to do this labor for me and then coming out and you're never hearing from me again, and you're not going to know what the good was, if any, of the research. So with the photo voice project I'm looking to implement, I'm looking for it to be long term, and I'm anticipating encountering some pushback, but I'm trying to have a financial compensation component, because I kind of think that that's really important, because you have these researchers going into communities asking them for their to recount traumatic experiences, to talk about difficulties and hardships, and then, yeah, leaving, and you never hear from them again. So I'm trying with this over WhatsApp. So once I leave, it'll continue going through my collaborators on the ground in Uganda, and just keep it, yeah, and keep incentivizing it, you know, because they want compensation for crop losses, but they don't get any. So this can be a kind of small way to compensate people for their labor and their losses. Of course, tons of ethics considerations, being who we are and inserting ourselves into that area. And that's kind of through my international lens I'm trying to critique through my dissertation, is how neocolonial and perpetuating of historic power dynamics conservation is, and how there doesn't seem to be much wiggle room to make that kind of change.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's a really important lens to look through. What is your favorite research project that you're working on? And yeah, for the sake of redundancy, it can be either one that you have worked on previously, it can be one that you're looking forward to working on, whatever you feel like elaborating on.
My favorite research project had better be my PhD, because it's taken up years of my life, and you know, it's a project that I have designed and led and I'm responsible for, and I'm applying to fieldwork funding opportunities now to hopefully be able to do my fieldwork next year and probably even in 2023. So yeah, hopefully it is my current PhD, and the theoretical framework that my dissertation is hoping to be based in is called polycentric governance. And that is about the concentric circles of spheres of influence that compete, collaborate, are in conflict, and resolve conflict amongst themselves to reach a particular goal. So in my case, it would be elephant governance and management in Uganda. So how do these actors on all different scales, from the local to the regional, national, and international, interact with each other, share information, reach common goals, or address conflict or solve conflict with each other? And that's what I'm hoping to figure out through interviewing. Currently I'm doing document analysis, so seeing what's there in policy papers and meeting proceedings and finding that there isn't much particular detail in the, you know, power and management side of things. So I'm excited and hopeful that interviews will illuminate a lot of that for me.
Absolutely. Good. If you could give one piece of advice to graduate students or early career academics, what would it be?
Yeah, if you're like me and motivated and inspired by working abroad and internationally, it is the most important to be aware of the implications of you being there and the implications of yourself on the community you're in and the community on you, and understanding to the best of your ability their culture, and being as humble as you can and showing a lot of humility, I think is important, because that is like my single kind of biggest pet peeve throughout all my time abroad, is encountering fellow expats, people coming internationally, who just come with a sense of entitlement or a preconceived notion of what the experience is going to be, in particular of what they're going to get out of it and what it's going to be to them. And the second they encounter any kind of barrier or wrench in their notion, their idealized notion of what their experience is going to be like, they fall apart and kind of cause harm by reacting poorly and being disrespectful and get in trouble that way, and hamper their own projects and their own research and the communities doing damage on the people you're aiming to maybe initially hope to help in whatever way you perceive that to be. So yeah, just definitely doing your due diligence and research, and definitely find a mentor in the community who has worked with international students before, who understands the common pitfalls and things to avoid. Yeah, that is, I think, the single most important
thing. Awesome. Along the threads of advice, you received the NSF GRFP in, was that 2019? Which is a huge accomplishment, and it's an incredibly competitive grant. So obviously you could go on and on about advice, but I guess if you had to give one piece of wisdom about how to develop a competitive application, what would you give?
Yeah, my biggest disclaimer is, since receiving the fellowship, exactly none of the people who I have provided advice and feedback for have received the fellowship. There's been an honorable mention, and that was nice, but yeah, I think, you know, personal statements, I think, can be underrated. I think a lot of people put a lot of emphasis on the research proposal and making sure it's, like, you know, based in science and finding a gap in science and showcasing yourself as an adequate researcher, but I really think the personal statement can allow for creativity beyond kind of recounting your resume in more detail. You can be creative, like, tell a story. Like, let the people know who you are through a story. I think that is what made the difference for me. I'm pretty proud of my personal statement, and I think it has served me well in other applications too. Like, the GRFP is kind of a good exercise of making a project proposal and personal statement that you know is going to, like, a high scale funding opportunity. So it's really useful to then build off of that for future applications. So I would say, even if you're not hopeful or optimistic, to just do it anyway and see what happens.
That's great insight. I agree totally. Looking forward, what do you hope to do with your postgraduate career, or where do you see yourself?
Yeah, so my dream position would probably be as a conservation social scientist for one of the big international conservation NGOs, and to be researching and implementing policy action on the ground internationally. But obviously it's a big pipe dream. Those positions are few and far between. So I'm thinking immediately after my PhD, maybe doing some government position or smaller NGOs to start off. Yeah, and then kind of see where I can build up from there. But yeah, I'm not looking to stay in academia. As much as it has helped me and served me, I'm really motivated now by the politics and policy side of conservation, and that requires kind of being at government or non-government organizations.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I think that's everything I had, but if you want to end with a blurb of, like, if they want to follow up with you, if you have, like, a website or anything like
that. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at marbirut, so marbirut. And I have a website, marthabirut.com. I'm always accessible on those forums. I'm active on Instagram and Twitter. And you can email me also at marthabirut@gmail.com.
Awesome.
If you are a new listener, feel free to connect with the Africa Center by visiting africacenter.colostate.edu, and the tab at the top that says connect will allow you to join our email list, where you can receive newsletters as well as information about upcoming events. We look forward to seeing you next time, and thank you for listening to Field Notes.